God, I hope the audio quality is good in our new seated position, because it has occurred to me that it is insane that we've been recording while I have my back up against any support, and you have just been sort of crisscross applesauce perched at the edge of my bed.
Well, I am now reclining luxuriously against your silky wincest pillow, so...
It's not a wincest pillow.
Oh, I'm so glad you bought this for yourself,
Sarah.
Shut
the hell up. Shut your mouth to hell. But, you know, the thing is, when I think about Supernatural, I just get all nostalgic.
Oh, nostalgic?
For, like, the ways things used to be.
Worse?
When I would log on to the internet and go to fanficrants.livejournal.com, and then I would read about the most insane bullshit you can imagine.
I had such a sudden swell of affection, and that was never me. You would just tell me about it. I would just sit, you'd be like the butler presenting, like, a little paper square with, like, the day's events to me.
And sometimes they're fun. And sometimes it's, like, just an exciting little flourish, like, oh, you won't believe the way they appropriated the Haitian earthquake into this fic.
Yikes! Oh, Lord Birmingham, that's not good. That was nothing. Why would you be a lord and a butler? You've fallen so far.
Also, you said Lord Birmingham.
Lord Birmingham, it's just my accent. I'm very upper class.
But yeah, you know, just like, it takes me back, you know, the Supernatural body pillow.
Really cementing that in the episode.
Jesus Christ, yeah. I should give myself any other intro, huh?
Well, you know, we talk a lot about how nostalgia is the idea of, like, looking back on the past with a fondness, but also a wistfulness, like, oh man, things were so good back then, and they were better than they are now. But sometimes you look back on the past and you're like, oh man, things were such a fucking trash fire back then, and you know what? It was kind of great.
It was, the crucible of time has burned away all the annoying stuff, and now it's just, like, fun flavor.
It's like, wow, she did what to crowdfund a laptop from unknowing fans?
This is not a fandom episode! Anyway, the progression of time marching slowly on, aging us wearily, and taking us further and further away from the halcyon days of our childhood. Thoughts?
Dislike.
You don't even remember your fucking childhood.
I don't. Fully, I don't. Sometimes I'm alarmed by that fact.
Tell me.
Sometimes it's just kind of fun.
How long did you live in Turkey and Egypt?
Let's see. When I was born, we lived in Egypt for, I don't know, like a couple years, probably, and then Russia for a couple years, and then Turkey for a few years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And?
All of this is hearsay that I have heard. You understand.
I lived in Courtyard 8.
Fancy.
Yeah. The 8th of 9 courtyards.
And it is actually funny that you mentioned that, because when we were talking about this episode before, I was kind of like, I don't remember reading before America. I think I just played in the dirt a lot. You know, oh, I'm sorry, I was just outside being a real Chad.
Just running around the...
Doing sports.
Embassy compound? Where the hell did you live?
You lived in an apartment. It was in an embassy apartment building, but it wasn't like a compound.
It was an elite compound, and your mom had to learn defensive driving.
She did. I mean, actually, technically, Dad, who was the actual Foreign Service employee, was supposed to learn defensive driving, but he either didn't have time to or just didn't want to, and so Mom was like, don't mind if I do.
I'll never use turn signals again.
Never again.
Cut that out if you want.
No, I'm not putting that in there. Mom, if you're listening to this, please use your goddamn turn signals. You're gonna hit a pedestrian.
Oh my god. Anyway, this has been a long walk to just... But look at us, reminiscing about the past.
I know. Oh, it's so on brand for this episode about nostalgia books.
Nostalgia books. And what are nostalgia books? Because it's funny, because we both agreed to, like, this episode topic, because we were like, oh, that's a really good one. And then we, like, sat down to plan it and realized that we were both thinking of two entirely different concepts.
Entirely different and almost incompatible to a certain extent. Because, again, one, you were like, oh yeah, I'm going to talk about books that I read as a child and then reread frequently and have this sense of, like, you know, strong memory attachment to them. And I was like, well, I don't remember my childhood. I never reread anything. And my memory is shit, so...
So, when talking about books that maybe transport you to a different point in time, your list is...
The past 3 months.
You're like, I remember finishing Les Mis. Oh, yeah. Of.
Kind of. Did I? Did I?
Did you?
It's fine. I kept the note card that I wrote it on.
Here's what I was thinking, and what I assumed you were also thinking, when I said, ooh, we should talk about books that make us very nostalgic. Those books that are, like, slightly formative, encountered at a younger age, encountered at a different time in our life, that time of our life has to be definitively over. You know? It can't be like, oh, this makes me nostalgic for, like, early 2020. I'm still in that phase of my life, you know? But I'm not in the phase of my life of, like, 2019 when I lived at home in Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know? To me, I consider this, like, a clean break phase. And I could be nostalgic for 2019 now.
That's really interesting, and that does make total sense. But, you know, when I think of nostalgia, I do truly think of, like, childhood, maybe high school, but who the fuck is actually nostalgic for high school?
We met in high school.
Yeah, I know. It all went downhill from there, Sarah.
Nostalgia.
Nostalgia.
What was, like, what's a book? Okay, actually, I know exactly what book you're going to have to talk about. And please tell me about a book that to you defines your childhood.
I'm crossing my arms.
Just like a book that, like, really takes you back to a certain time and then was, like, kind of formative in terms of you being, like, a fucking horrible person. Who was into shitty men.
Right. You're so right. My obsessions go deep. Yeah, the second that you said nostalgia books when I thought we were operating on the same definition, I was instantly like, Aragon, motherfuckers.
Paolini.
Christopher Paolini. I read it. I'm not gonna try to guess at how old I was. I don't even know how old. I can't look at a child and guess at how old they were. I can't look at my own memories and know that. I was a youngin', okay? I was in, like, elementary school, probably.
Yeah,
middle school.
You were back from Turkey and you were obsessed with squirrels.
So obsessed with squirrels. We didn't really have those over there, and I would literally make mom stop the car when we saw one in someone's yard so I could look at it. Yeah. But yes, so I read Aragon at a very formative age, and I read it and I was, like, very enchanted by the idea that Christopher Paolini wrote it when he was, like, 16 and got it published. That was, like, probably the initial seeds of ambition that I can concretely remember where I was like, I'm going to do that too. So I was like, you know, I was probably like, I don't know, 11 or something.
Yeah, you're like, I have plenty of time.
Plenty of time. but it's fine because, you know, speaking of nostalgia and looking back on things, looking back on Aragon... I mean, yeah, okay, we're not gonna start dumping on it, but, like, it was the ultimate for me as a kid. And looking back on it, it's like, okay, it's a fantasy novel, you know? It's kind of like fantasy Star Wars. But it was really the first, like, I don't know, would you call it, like, mid-grade YA? Like, I don't know what...
I would say mid-grade, maybe?
Yeah. It's not really YA, but, like... I feel like those categories, maybe it's just the fact that I hadn't heard of them until I was older.
I feel
older,
like they
but...
were less concrete prior to, like, the Harry Potter Twilight solidification of genre, mm-hmm. of, like, the YA genre more.
Yeah.
And even that, Harry Potter is more, like, notable because it's, like, goes from one grade to another.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, Aragon is kind of like fantasy for babies. And I was a little baby and I loved it so much. And then when speaking of memories that we attach to books, I distinctly remember driving with mom, having, like, just finished it and, like, pumping her for information as to whether or not she thought they would ever make a movie of the book.
Oh my god.
Yup. I was, like, so obsessed with it. And then they did make a movie, and I was literally so excited. I had not understood anticipation over, like, months before this. God. And it was like the build and the build and the build. And I distinctly remember my Uncle Jeff was visiting when the movie came out, but I was like, I don't care. We're going to go see this opening night. We saw it. And I literally gained the knowledge of disillusionment as a child. That was my first experience with true gut-wrenching disappointment. And I distinctly remember walking out of the theater and mom being like, so what did you think? And me just being like, this pained grimace on my face, being like, it was fine. And I've been broken ever since.
But we need to talk about my favorite fact about this, which is, if we're talking about like nostalgia books too, for me also means like kind of like books as like physical artifacts, to be like, it's not just Tamora Pierce's like Alana the Lioness series for me. It's the fact that that my copies of the books all have the fucking margins ripped out, because I used to just tear the margins out and eat it as I read.
You're such a little freak, and I loved that.
It's the fact that even to this day, any book that I like, you can see is absolutely crinkled to shit, because I compulsively put my thumbnail on the page, and then just, like, fuck with it on every page. I mean, literally any book I read, I have to have scrap paper nearby, so I don't do it, because I've learned since being a child that it's not wholly charming to just destroy your books.
I made you a little polymer clay bookmark, so you could mess with that instead.
I love it.
You lost it.
Did I? Yeah, I did lose it.
It's fine, I found it. That I've been keeping it safe.
That doesn't mean I don't love it. It just means I'm me.
Yes, I understand.
Yes.
I too lose things, like all my memories from before the age of 18.
But in terms of, like, books as physical artifacts rather than, like, the story they contain, your copy of Aragorn falling open to the torture scene?
Yep! Oh my god, so funny. I literally cracked the spine on that book to the scene where a character gets tortured because I was a fucked up little dude.
And you're like, Durza.
Durza. Oh, the evil lieutenant tortures people?
We've for sure...
Role model.
We've for sure talked about this before.
We have.
This is going to be a reminiscing kind of episode. It's hard not to. Sorry
just
about
that,
guys. Just
imagine us sitting on a porch in rocking chairs and you'll get the real gist of it. With my fucking destroyed copy of Aragorn. Me, fucking 11 years old, not really understanding what horniness was, but beginning to get an idea. So, you know, we all have our tactile artifacts of the books we loved as a child. What would you say that your book is that you, I guess, ate the largest percentage of?
No question. Tamora Pierce. And I can tell you, Tamora Pierce, specifically The Lioness and Protector of the Small. I never finished the Dane series. I'm going to finish it someday. I know, because you're a horse girl and
a
wolf
horse,
girl.
Wolf girl.
Also, you had multiple horses.
I was honestly just a full-around animal girl.
Yeah.
I didn't discriminate in the animal kingdom.
Amelia didn't own horses. It's important for us to get that out there. She just owned horse figurines.
Oh, yeah. So many horse figurines. They were beautiful.
And a stuffed animal collection that was, like, too big.
Yeah, that I kept for a really long time because,
But you didn't keep it on your bed. You kept it in a crevice alongside your bed so that, like, almost, like, your bed was just pushed a foot away from the wall on one side. And if you looked over, there's just this crevasse of, like, 30 stuffed animals.
Yeah,
that
that's
fallen to their death.
That's the stuffed animal chasm, Sarah. I know I said chasm. Go ahead and get your fucking laughs out.
I wasn't gonna say it because I feel like I correct your pronunciation too much.
You do, and it's permanently damaged my psyche, but you know what? It's fine.
Here's what I can tell you. That's the Tamora Pierce books. Fucking A, girl power. Back when, like, that was just something I could say without being sarcastic about it, and I wish I could get back to that. I kind of miss, young Sarah was fucking rabid about female characters. And I loved that, looking back. I'm so proud of her.
That's so great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you didn't love Dane, and that's fine. So fine. I mean, it's so cool. Her books are so cool, but, you know, it's fine.
But specifically, Kel, Protector of the Small, has always been my go-to, to the point where, and this is where our relationship with these, this is where our relationship with, like, our nostalgic books diverges instantly, because you liked Aragorn. Sorry. You liked Aragorn, and haven't read it since.
No.
Yeah. And I liked Protector of the Small a lot, and I've read it when I was entering middle school, when I was in high school, when I was stressed. It was her four books, the books I took to college, and I remember I read the, probably should have been Making Friends, but in the first weekend I was at college, there was this massive rainstorm and flood, and all the power went out. And I ended up just reading all four of the Protector of the Small series in my dorm room, because Kel is my book of emotional strength. And I read it when I went to nursing school, and I read it when I moved out here.
Wow, that's wild. I did not know you'd reread it that many times.
I reread it periodically. Like, whenever I enter a new phase of my life, I'm like, time to check in on Kel.
Man, that's kind of cool, actually. And it is like, yeah, I really never reread stuff. I was telling you, it's like, I've reread Annihilation, and I've reread Ancillary Justice, and I struggled to think off the top of my head what else I have actually reread. I did technically reread The Empress of Salt and Fortune, because I had the terrifying experience of recommending it to people that I was about to take a long car ride with, and then being like, oh, cool, do you want to see if it's on audiobook? And I was like, okay. And they're like, oh, sweet, it is. Do you want to listen right now? And I was like, okay. I hope you guys like it. I've never had someone literally pull out the book that I've recommended in front of me and start to consume it.
How devastating would it have been if 20 minutes in, somebody just switched it over to, like, a Billy Joel song?
Well, hey, we made it to the end. again, I think that the opportunity to offer critique on it was limited, but
I'm terrified of people actually consuming the things I like.
Well, bad news, buddy.
Bad news, I know.
I've already started. But yeah, you know, I never have reread stuff, but that is something that I want to make an active effort to change, because I am kind of like, why? These are books that I like, and I think part of it is the fact that it's preserving the nostalgia. You
yeah.
Because it's like, I know when/if I go back and reread Aragorn, I'm probably just gonna, I'm like a grown-ass adult now. Like, I probably won't really get as much out of it as I did as a kid, because this was, like, my introduction to, well, I shouldn't say my introduction, because, like, I'd read The Hobbit at that point, or at least had it read to me. But this was, like, the first time that I felt like I was, like, discovering fantasy, you know? And I'm never going to be able to experience that again. I'm never going to be able to experience what that book meant to me as a kid. And I do just kind of suspect that it won't hold up. And again, you know, no diss on the book or anything, but I'm just a very different person now, and I won't like it as much.
Yeah. I love the evolving relationship I have with the books I reread, though, even when they're disappointing. Like, I remember when we did an episode on Good Omens fucking 17 years ago, rereading it, I had to kind of confront it that, like, it hadn't aged as well as I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And that it had stuff that was like, oh, I don't like this, or, oh, like, I never, like, this part's not as good, or this doesn't hit me as well.
Or this is kind of racist, actually.
This is kind of racist. This is kind of homophobic.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a pretty good book.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it is this interesting, I think, but I feel like for me, even disillusionment is built into the relationship that I have with books that I revisit. That's sort of the price you pay to, like, to check back in with old friends, is that they might have changed in ways, or they might not have changed, and you're the one who's changed.
Yeah.
But it's like that idea, you know, it's like, every time you remember a memory, you alter that memory.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the only preserved memories are the ones you'd never remember. For me, it's like, well, them being preserved don't necessarily do me any good. In the sense of, like, I would rather re-encounter it and have a different reaction to it than never encounter it again.
Yeah, that's very fair. And I think part of it might have to do with the types of books that we really fixated on as kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, you were like, oh, I'm over here reading essays and poetry. And I was like, I'm reading Goosebumps and Animorphs.
it's so funny, because, like, when it's also so specifically nostalgic for me, because, okay, so one book I have, which I've been rereading, is Ex Libris, Confessions of a Common Reader by Anne Fadiman, which was a book my mom really loved. It's a book about essays, essentially, about what it means to be a reader and the different ways you read things. And it's so funny reading it and being like, I read this when I was 10? What the hell did I get out of it? It's, like, so dense, but, like, very funny and very, very, like, clever and pointed. And I was like, oh, I used to read so many essays and so much nonfiction. And what, in my mind, I really refer to as, like, This American Life literature. And it's like the voice of Ira Glass in my head. And it's like, I can't describe how formative this sort of exposure to early, like, contemporary fiction and nonfiction was for me. And it was primarily through my mother and my aunt Janine, and my mother really ex libris, and then from my aunt Janine, she was really into poetry, and specifically the Polish poet, specifically in this case for me, the Polish poet Wisława Szymborska, who I remember in fifth grade we had to write an essay about our favorite poets, and I was trying to write about my favorite poet Wisława Szymborska, the most Polish ass name I've ever heard, and me being like, writing, I would love to see how I wrote that name, because even as I was doing it in fifth grade, I'm like, I'm very wrong.
That is interesting, though, because I don't think that my parents ever really recommended books to me, you know? I do genuinely feel like mom was just like, go outside. But yeah, and it's like, I do kind of feel like one of, like, my really strong reading memories is of sitting down in the library, either the school library or the, like, public library, and just the Goosebumps and Animorphs shelves were always by the floor, and I would just sit by them and just kind of read my way through. And that was just like, that was good times. That's a strong nostalgia kind of place memory for me. And I feel like the sort of, I don't know, I love how campy they are. And that's another thing where I'm like, I don't think I could necessarily go back to them and be like, ah, yes, I'm just gonna pick up Goosebumps and start reading this and be like, I love the attention to language. Like, you know, again, maybe I would, but I think perhaps not.
For me, the series that I think of very fondly and have zero desire to reunite with is the Magic Treehouse series. I have very strong memories of those two fucking kids in that little treehouse going all over time and space. Doctor Who?
Oh. Is the treehouse bigger on the inside?
I think it might be.
Wow, okay. Plagiarism.
But yeah, what am I going to do as an adult woman with Magic Treehouse? Although I'm kind of curious to reread it. I might reread it. I think I'm going to reread the Magic Treehouse.
Hey, and I'll reread Goosebumps and we'll both have a great time. I will say, though, actually one thing, this was like one of the first books that I reread, honestly, and it was another one that was like a strong one when I was a kid, was actually The Golden Compass. And when I was a kid, I read The Golden Compass and I was like, wow, that's really cool. They have like animal familiars. That's a reflection of their soul. I would love to have one of those. It would be really cool. And it would definitely be like a dragon or some shit. And then like rereading it as an adult, I was like, holy fuck, this is like the language in this is really good. Like just very well crafted as a book. So it's kind of fun being like finding something that actually can be read on both levels. Because I feel like a lot of yours actually can't be read on both levels. It's just that you read them when you were so young that truly who knows what you actually absorbed. And then you just read them again and were like, oh, wow, this is something.
This is really good. I know it's like I'm gonna make you read Ex Libris.
I would love to. It sounds really interesting.
I would love to do an episode about like essay collections.
Yes.
Or something. I don't know. It's just so funny. And it's so interesting to read this and to be like, the degree to which I have internalized this book is what it means to be a reader.
Mm-hmm.
It's to have a library. It's to read a lot of Tennyson. It's to have a weird shelf. It's to be really fucking, I don't know how to say this, Anne Fadiman, I mean this all love. You sound insufferable and I feel inadequate. But you're also very funny. These are good essays.
I mean, you did read a very enjoyable bit to me about Arctic exploration, which pretty much cinched it for me. Like, yeah, I'll read that.
But yeah, it's the language of it. I do think a lot of the early language of this poetry and these essay books and these NPR, David Sedaris and David Rakoff, Sarah Vowell, sort of this, do you know any of these?
I've read David Sedaris. Sedaris? I don't know.
That sounds so, I didn't mean that to be in a condescending way.
Babe, it sounded super condescending. Oh, I'm sorry, have you not read any of these famous essays before you were 12? Cringe.
I genuinely think my intellectual, the height of my intellectual ambition was like, 12 years old, going with my aunt to DuPont Circle so we could go to that one bookshop that, like, sold weird essay books about, like, sex and what it means to be an American while George Bush is president.
Wild. Meanwhile, I was, like, cracking Aragon open sensually. Time to read the torture scene again.
I think what appeals to me so much about revisiting these books and rereading, to the point where I have to, like, stop myself from rereading as much as I want to. I just reread a book today that I read last year because we were doing our Best Of episode and I was talking about The Gentle Art of Fortune Hunting by K.J. Charles. I was like, yeah, that is a good one. And then I reread it.
It was good. I also read it. That's right, Sarah. I'm on the scent. I'm reading the stuff you like, and you can't hide from me any longer.
No! Why do we have a podcast where I share my interests?
This is healing for you. This is hey, your therapist has actually been paying me for the past 7 years.
Weird. I haven't been in therapy for seven... Have
I also, I don't think we've been doing years. Crack spines for 7 years.
Yeah, babe, we for sure haven't. What I love about revisiting books is specifically that they work as, like, diaries for me, to be like, I remember very distinctly where I am when I've read some books. Not every book. Some books are just, I've read them, mm-hmm. you know? But others are like, oh, I remember I read this, in high school of my senior year of high school. It was Jane Eyre. I read it and I was absolutely wild about Rochester. And then I remember going to the end note of one quote the end note making clear that this was a rape threat from Rochester to Jane and me being like, well, that's a little problematic, but I'm not gonna worry about it. And then, like, the three other times I had to read Jane Eyre. Like, I remember all of them, and each time sort of coming back to being like, I am bringing a new approach to this book. One that is increasingly, like, maybe Rochester is not a good guy to date. Rochester doesn't really matter. It's all about Jane, and Rochester is this sort of vehicle through which Jane can express herself to...
And he suffers a lot,
and
which
he
does
suffers
help.
A lot to, like, you know... The being able to think more complexly about, like, the language and the structuring of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I have all those memories, and reading Jane Eyre helps me tap into those memories from all those different years. I'll, like, encounter a sentence, and I'll, like, viscerally remember where I was in my life the first time I read it.
Hmm.
And that's why I love rereading books. To me, they're even better than diaries in a lot of ways for bringing me back to the past.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I truly do not have that. There's really only, like, a couple books that I feel like I, other than, like, and you know, even, like, Goosebumps and Animorphs, like, I remember sitting by the shelf and reading them, but I don't have, like, you know, that same, like, anchor, I guess, to, like, the physical sensations. But I do remember being on the road with you. We were at Mount Ashland at a campground up there, and I had strung up my hammock somewhere, and at some point we had bought some ground cherries, which I still can't figure out what exactly those are and where I can get more because they were so good and I have never found them again. But I was eating these things out of a bag and I was reading Yagenoth by Karen Tidbeck and Bloodchild by Octavia Butler. Truly, honestly, like, if you wanted to sum me up as a person, I feel like those two works of fiction, that would do it. Yeah, so, and honestly, that was just such a good memory that it's kind of like, I feel like it just kind of, like, wormed its way into my psyche. You know, it is funny, because speaking of nostalgia and how I always associated that term with, like, looking back on childhood, but I do have this weird sense of book-related nostalgia for the early pandemic when, like, things were still so weird, but it was, like, it was truly, like, just this huge paradigm shift in my life where it was, like, I had gone to feeling fairly, like, stable in my job. You had literally just come out here. I had kind of had all these expectations about what things were going to be like, and then suddenly it was like, nope. And so working from home and just everything feeling like strange, but also in a weird way, kind of new. And that was when I tore through the Shadow Campaigns by Django Wexler. And I listened to them mostly on audiobook, which I hadn't really listened to many audiobooks before. And I just spent so much time that spring and summer walking down to the National Historic Site close to us and just like sitting in the grass and staring out over the river and listening to these books. And I just have these like really powerful memories of that. And they are now intrinsically tied to those books to the point where, and so I guess I do get this, but only in the past 2 years, because before that my memory starts to dissolve. But
truly nothing. We should work on that.
Yeah, it's concerning me actually. But yeah, there's like, when I think of like parts in the book, I'm like, oh yeah, I was like approaching our apartment building, but I decided to take an extra lap around the block so I could finish listening to this chapter and make sure that my favorite character didn't die. So I do feel like I have those really strong memories for those books. And I kind of wonder if it being an audiobook was also helpful for that.
Maybe. I know there's like a lot of songs that are like, I remember this song, this dumb playlist I associate walking around in Paris to, you know?
Yeah, this song I associate with playing it on the road trip to torment you.
We got like, that could be like 5 or 6 different songs.
So many.
Songs.
I mean, Desperado, Big Iron. What was the one that we did?
The man who shot Liberty Valance. He shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all. Is that copyright infringement?
We'll find out.
Man. I think, though, of the books that I've... Of the stuff that I've read early on... I mean, I guess it'd be insane if I said that, like, Protector of the Small isn't the one that I revisit the most. Because listing it out, I think it actually has been. But I'm most grateful for being exposed to so much poetry early on. Because it's really great to have an evolving relationship with poetry. I feel like that, it's like the succinctness of the form and sometimes the like combination of like the precision of language but the complexity of emotions means that all those come together to like really be something you can kind of speed run revisiting. Like instead of like doing this whole 4-book series, it's like to read these poems. Sorry, I was about to quote one, but then I got too self-conscious.
Well, do it anyways.
Well, it's the thing is, it's like, you know, even thinking about the poems, it's like, you know, I was about to quote one, and it's like, I'm not actually sure on the words, but it's like, the rhythm of it is so ingrained, and like, the rhythm of like, my aunt reading it to me, so that even now, when I read, it could have happened, it had to happen, it happens nearer, further. It happened, but not to you. Something like that. Like, I read it, and I can perceive it now as an adult, but I hear it the way that I heard it as a child, in the very specific rhythms of it being read to me. That's cool. Everyone should read poetry about the inevitability and the randomness of death.
Hey, your aunt and your mom made you a pretty cool person.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you know, this actually kind of makes me, because, like, I have not read a lot of poetry. I frankly have not enjoyed a lot of poetry. I kind of find that a character flaw on my own part.
No!
Yeah! But the only poet that I feel like I've ever really connected with was Khalil Gibran, who I really actually, now that we're talking about this, would like to go back and reread more of his works, because I feel like that was the only poet where, like, I read some of his stuff. And I mean, they're like, I don't know, fairly, like, romantic, capital R, mm-hmm. you know? They're, like, kind of, like, big and epic and sort of, like, old, and a lot of them are kind of, like, love mm-hmm. poems, but, like, you know, I don't know. Is there a love poem that isn't also kind of a sad, epic love poem? But yeah, I think it would be interesting to go back to them now, since that is, like, something that I connected with when I was younger, and that's one of the things where I'm like, you know what, I'd either get more out of it as I'm older, or I would just perceive it in a different way that would also be interesting.
I think everything you love is worth rereading.
All right, well,
no,
you heard it. You heard it here first. We're going to be doing Aragon for our next episode. Cannot wait.
I mean, we should do Aragon.
We should
right?
probably do Aragon at some point.
Did you ever read the sequels to Aragon?
I did. I didn't read the final one, though. I just kind of got bored, honestly.
Should we finish the Aragon series? God, that's so many words.
So many words, and I don't think they're that good. And here's my thing.
You're afraid to read...
I'm afraid!
2,000 pages of mediocre writing?
Yeah, I'd really rather not. Here's my thing for why I don't really reread books. There's so many books in the world, and there's so many that I want to read, and I'm like, I don't have time to reread, honestly. Yeah.
But it's just a different way of experience. You know, sometimes I think you haven't read a book until you've reread it.
Seven times
at every formative stage in your life.
I think that is cool, though, to have books that are kind of like your constant companions.
The Hobbit, also. I mean, we haven't really discussed it, but...
Oh, yeah, that's
Hobbit,
on my list. And
I've read more than any other book, I think, in existence.
I'm not sure how many times I've reread it, but that, like, The Hobbit and The Golden Compass are probably the only two from my childhood that I've actually reread as an adult at least once. Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could say, you know, in talking about, like, books actually... that are very complicated to revisit. I would, like, the Harry Potter series was tremendously influential on me, like, to the point where I listened to the audiobook so much I had a slight British accent.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Brutal, really.
Yeah, a little bit.
I related so intensely to Hermione. Like, the Prisoner of Azkaban I thought was, like, the pinnacle of literature. And when I was rereading the books 4 or 5 years ago, I was being like, yeah, this is a really charmingly written, like, the writing style I actually really like, you know, I think it has a lot in line with that sort of British understated wonder that is so lovely to read, but is, I don't know, like, we were talking about doing a Harry Potter book, like, episode, and I was like, I just don't want to, like, support J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
And it sucks. It sucks to... I think the hardest place to be in when you're revisiting books is books that, like, still hold up on their own, but have uncomfortable baggage you now know about them.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Ender's Game, Ender's Shadow, tremendously influential books on me. And now it's like, you know, I don't think you have to, like, stop reading. I don't think, like, I don't know what I'm trying to fucking say here.
I don't know. Well,
everyone should support Orson Scott Card and buy his books in cash. Give him money. The man's just trying to stop gay people from existing, and I don't see what's wrong with that.
I read Ender's Game when I knew what a shitbag Orson Scott Card is, and actually it facilitated a beautiful moment where I came out to my mom because I was complaining about how homophobic Orson Scott Card was. So, joke's on you, asshole. But yeah, I think it is a really complicated thing when you really love a piece of media and the creator is just a whole bag of dicks.
Yeah. And even, like, I think it's even more complicated than, like, I didn't feel qualms about getting love, like, reading Lovecraft, because he dead.
Yeah, he's super dead.
He's super dead.
And it's like, yeah, when we talk about Lovecraft, we're obviously gonna, like, acknowledge the issues with that. And it's like, at this point, it's kind of like, because I kind of get that too, where it's like, when you're dealing with a author who is already dead, it's sort of like, well, there's probably not really any new information that's going to come out that suddenly, like, changes the playing field. But who knows what J.K. Rowling will tweet next.
I know. It's like, and on this other, it's, they're done. You know, Rudyard Kipling is not going to think to himself, maybe the white man's burden was a racist poem. Like, it's, there is no more progress to be made with that man. And there's also, like, not necessarily money for him to get to, in order to fund writing White Man's Burden Part 2.
White Man's Baggage. Yeah, you know, it's almost more stressful when the person is, like, still alive and kicking, and you're just kind of watching them, and you're like, boy, I sure wish that you would do things differently, but you are not, and it just adds a lot of kind of grief, almost, when you see this thing that you love be tainted by that. And, you know, I don't have really any judgment for people who, like, continue to really love Harry Potter and have their own complicated relationship with it. I have judgment for people who have an uncomplicated relationship with Harry Potter, but, yeah, I think that things like that are really complicated, and each person needs to just, like, figure out their own way of approaching it in a way that feels, like, good to you and right to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and so, also maybe just, you know, donate to your local trans supporting organizations once in a while.
I think it sucks when it's not that you've drifted away from something. It feels like it's been taken away.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's one thing,
like,
to,
when I learned the torture was actually bad, it was like, how can I even read Aragon again?
That's the one reason you haven't revisited it. Your morals are too good.
Well, I'm so sorry. You were saying something, and
I'm going to say, honestly, you blasted it out of my head.
I'm so sorry. But yeah, you know, I think, to kind of wrap up this segment of the discussion, I think that all authors have their own baggage with them. And some of it is, like, baggage that might just be for you personally, and some of it is, like, no, they are, like, they have done shitty things.
Yeah.
And so it can just be hard to navigate that sometimes.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've talked about, I specifically have talked about revisiting books, and I've kind of, I mentioned a little bit, like, sometimes you revisit books and it's not good, you know? But I think that is also not luck of the draw necessarily, but that is also something that can be educational and rewarding in its own way, to read something you used to love and discover you no longer love it.
Yeah.
It's sad, but sometimes it's an interesting way to mark your growth as a person.
I mean, that is, like, literally what nostalgia is about, right? Is, like, looking back on something and being like, I'm a different person now, and that's kind of sad, but it's also kind of good, because, like, the fact that I am different and can no longer access this thing means that I have grown.
Yeah. It's so hard to tell the ways that you've grown unless you have a comparison point. And sometimes that comparison point is looking at your old books and going, holy shit, I used to just eat paper.
Did you have pica?
I don't know. I would eat the shit out of paper, though.
Yeah, wild.
I feel like the Timor Pierce ones were also good because it was like, oh man, it was like, the books were this kind of like,
oh, they had this velvety texture, melts in your mouth.
They're kind of like yellowed, and they had this sort of like, it wasn't the high acid content.
Oh my god.
They genuinely just tasted like hardcovers, like some glossy pages, can't have those. I've discovered hardcover books tend to have grosser pages. But,
probably higher quality.
But, like, the pulp, ugh.
Okay, so next episode, forget Aragon. We're just gonna do a taste test with various books from inside of our house. Library books are also literally on the table, with a knife and fork on either side of them. Hey, you're insane, and I love that.
I don't do it anymore.
Usually.
Sometimes, I'm gonna be honest, Amelia, I've periodically just peeled some, like, a page off of a book, like, the little margins, and I've eaten it to see if it sparks joy, and it doesn't.
Wow. I guess that's growth.
But you have to check in. You have to revisit.
Okay, fine, I'll read Aragon again. God, twist my arm.
And I'll eat it.
Yeah, there we go. Hide the sin.
You finish a page, rip it out, hand it to me. I'll read it. I'll eat it.
Our personal apartment shredder.
My mouth is already so dry.
So dry.
My mouth is like, it's like medically concerning how dry my mouth is currently.
It's almost like you're being prepared for something.
What is, for what?
Eating paper. Your mouth is already super dry.
It needs to be moist. You don't know anything about eating paper.
I'm so sorry.
You think you can just put paper in a dry mouth? No, babe. You gotta build up that spit. Oh, I would, like, roll around, like, that spitball in my mouth full of, like, paper and get it, like, wet and moist.
I would,
like,
oh, my God.
Oh, I remember this. I would, like, squinch it up and then I would, like, unfurl it. Like,
you're vile, okay? I am loving this, but holy shit.
Then I would, like, chew it back in like a little cartoon person eating a corn on the cob.
I'm losing my mind right now. This is just, listen, again, I knew that you ate paper. I thought that it was like an absent-minded, like, oh no, I'm eating the pages. You fucking reveled in it.
I loved it.
This was a delicacy for you.
I want you to know, there's a book by Lois Lowry, Number of the Stars, which is about hiding a Jewish family during World War II. And we're reading it being like, this is quite a good book. I'm an adult and it really holds up well. This is good. Ah, this page is devoured.
Who knows what can happen? Somebody like an alien historian, like, 2,000 years from now, is going to be sifting through the ancient remains of books in this apartment. horrifying implications of, I guess, whatever happened, that all of that we either lived here until we died of old age, or something really bad happened. But they're going to be like, oh no, the page is missing. There must have been a secret treasure map here that somebody knew they had to tear out and hide and destroy. But no, it was just a weird little kid who loved to fucking chew on paper. And unroll it like a scroll and then shove it back into their mouth again and then mush it up with their spit and then chew on it with their molars and then be like, the canines now.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do. I would like alternate, ooh, and be like, I'd bite with the back teeth, bite with the front teeth, kind of nibble around.
I don't like this kind of nostalgia.
I remember like, I'm sorry, either you're editing
this. We gotta fucking wrap this up.
We'll wrap it up. I'm just gonna say, I used to also add, like, so much spit to it, I would make, like, a paste, and then I would sculpt stuff out of
paste. Wild! Oh my god. See, you like crafting, you like sculpting things.
Okay.
I have no idea how to transition to the ending from there, but holy shit, this has been Crack Spines.
You can find us on Instagram at Crack Spines Pod, on Twitter at SpinesCast, and you can email us at crackspinespodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song was made by Snow Ghost. If I could print it out and eat it, I would, and I would make it into a little paste.
You can print it out and eat it, actually. Like, I'll have him send you the note chart. Wow, that was bracing. The note chart! The sheet music! Okay.
It was you trying to be condescending to me at the same time that made it so good.
We're just a couple babies in the same sand pit eating sand.
I think if you don't have a nostalgia book right now, pick one you like and read it once a year for the next 20 years.
And I think never open that shit again, never look back. Memory is a black pit into which you cast your selfhood.
No new friends. Only old books.
This has been Crack Spines.
Thanks for listening. Now, I will continue my dissertation. So, got other good books to eat.
Okay, I'm just gonna go ahead. Turn off the mic.
They had to kind of be kind of yellowed with age. Books that I borrowed from people. That was always good to eat. The forbidden fruit.
Sarah, I have to ask. Did you ever eat a library book? Uh-huh.
You're fucking nasty.